This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Today I'll talk to the artist Tino Segal and sample his giant performance piece that's taken over the entire Guggenheim Museum in New York, which is like nothing I've ever seen, or rather participated in. But first up, one of my favorite movies of the year was about a special guerrilla squad of Jewish-American GIs whacking Nazis during World War II.
And hi!
Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds is up for 8 Academy Awards next weekend, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Original Screenplay. It's full of memorable performances, from Christoph Waltz's smooth SS officer to Brad Pitt's kick-ass backwoods leader of the Bastards.
My name is Lieutenant Aldo Rain, and I'm putting together a special team, and I need me 8 soldiers. 8 Jewish American soldiers. Now, I'm the direct descendant of the mountain man Jim Bridger. That means I got a little engine in me. And our battle plan will be that of an Apache resistance. We will be cruel to the Germans. And through our cruelty, they will know who we are.
When Brad comes into the movie, he's so American.
Yeah, yeah.
It just hits in such a way that this is an American voice now, after the French voice and the German voices and the British voices.
Especially given that his whole gang of people are essentially New York Jewish guys.
Yes, exactly, exactly. But the mountain boy accent, the deep hillbilly dialect. And I actually had Randall Wallace. I was at a party with him recently. He's the guy who wrote Braveheart.
Right.
And he's from the South. And he came up and he said, I want to thank you. And it was cool because he's like this historical guy. And he goes, I want to thank you for actually betraying a Southerner at that time that was on the right side of everything, that wasn't a racist, that wasn't a Klan guy. No, he's fighting against racism in every way, but he's completely a mountain boy,
yeah.
You know.
Inglourious Basterds has been described rightly, as far as it goes, as a Jewish revenge fantasy. What was the germ that made you want to make this film about revenge on the Nazis versus whatever other oppressors you could have made a revenge fantasy about?
Well, you know, it's funny because what gets me to start being interested in something and thinking I'm going to do it is usually very, very simple. It usually is I've hooked into a genre.
Uh-huh.
And in this case, the subgenre was, you know, World War II movies, bunch of guys on a mission.
Uh-huh.
Kind of, they used to make a lot in the 60s,
yes.
And they haven't made that much since.
30 Dozen, Great Escape.
Exactly,
yeah,
the
right.
Devil's Brigade, that kind of stuff.
Guns of Navarone.
Exactly. And, but then I was like, okay, a bunch of guys on a mission. Who are the guys and what's the mission? And I came up with the idea of Jewish soldiers basically doing an Apache resistance against the Nazis. And part of the reason I came up with that is I hadn't seen it before. And it was something that would have been cool. I would
sure.
have liked to have seen it. And I've heard, you know, different stories about an American company in either Sicily or occupied France, and they capture some Germans and they go to interrogate them. And their whole story is like, look, if you don't tell us what we want to know, we're going to give you our Jew. Now, if we give you our Jew, just forget about it. You want to talk to me. You don't want to talk to Irving over here. And so they have, well, what about a whole platoon of those guys?
You talk about these guys as, you know, the 20th century World War II equivalents of Apache resistance fighters. And they do indeed brutally beat and scalp their victims. Although I want to say this movie is not nearly as violent as it gets credit for. It's not so violent.
I concur. All right. Not only that, actually, there's been a funny thing that happened. I never thought that this would be the case. Look, I do have an extreme – well, not an extreme, a close-up of a scalping that a lot of people are –
And there's moment.
Yeah. Actually, I like the ooh moments, all right? I actually think that's people having a good time, all right? If they didn't like it, they'd walk out.
Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, when people are like, that's actually them enjoying the movie in their own way. But the thing that's very funny is in every single interview in Japan and Korea that was like a genuine interview, one of the things that they – as opposed to these crazy shows that they put you on is you really downplayed the violence in this movie compared to your other movies. Was that a conscious decision on your part to go less violent? Which just always made me laugh, because I go, well, nobody in America and Europe is saying that. I think it just speaks of how violent your cinema is.
Although good for them to sort of see through the reputation.
I agree. But it actually is, you know, Korean cinema and right. Japanese cinema is
they
far
go,
more
they
violent.
They go full bore. Yeah.
Yeah, it's far more violent than European cinema.
Now, you screened this movie at the Simon Wiesenthal Center in L.A. and at the Museum of Jewish Heritage here in New York. Mm-hmm. And some Jewish viewers objected to the idea that you have a couple of your heroes be essentially suicide bombers.
Now, that's one of my favorite things about the movie. That's one of my favorite aspects about the film, actually. And one of the things about that, though, is that wasn't set up by me to make a comment. That was something I just came up with as far as the story was concerned. Now, once I did, I could not help but realize right. that this is a comment on terrorists, and in every way. They're going into a crowded building. They're not all military people there. There's wives, there's girlfriends, but they do it anyway.
And you go so far in a moment that just made the hairs on my back stand up. You have the main Nazi, the amazing Christopher Waltz, mm-hmm. make this comment.
Explosives still around their ankle, still ready to explode, and your mission, some would call it terrorist plot, as of this moment, is still a go.
Yes, exactly. No, I love that. I'm surprised that has been commented on so little. But that's actually one of my favorite wrinkles of the story.
I know you watched Nazi propaganda films like Leni Riefenstahl preparing yeah. this film. Mm-hmm. What did you figure out or what did you learn or absorb mm-hmm. cinematically from that?
Well, what I learned more than anything else is that what we think, I mean, you have to remember, Gabriel's made about 800 movies.
And a lot of them were just regular movies.
That was it. That's what I learned. If you just imagine about Nazi propaganda movies, you would just think they would all be anti-Semitic, pro-war films. Now, if you want to see goose-stepping Nazis, you need to see American and British movies made at that time period. You won't see goose-stepping Nazis out of Germany. Most of the movies were romances. Most of the movies were comedies or Glockenspiel musicals or movies about great Germans of the past.
And then there's Triumph of the Will, which is neither one nor the other, which, she always said, I never said anything anti-Semitic there. I was never glorifying the race hatred. And it is this beautiful film.
Oh, no, look, I'm a huge fan of Leni Riefenstahl's talent. I mean, I think it's obvious she was anti-Semitic. I think she was obvious she went along with the party. Having said that, her greatest defense is Olympia.
The Olympics, 1936 Munich Olympics.
Yes,
movie.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things that's so touching, especially in retrospect, when you look at Olympia, is to see all these young men and women all over the world competing and knowing that in just 4 years' time, they would be killing each other. But at this moment, it wasn't happening. And she obviously didn't fall into the party line 100% because the fetishistic way she shoots Jesse Owens.
Yes. This is a movie about...
I wouldn't be surprised if she had sex with Jesse Owens. I mean...
You've heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, well she liked black men. That's very obvious.
She spent the last 20 years of her life making films of naked black men in Africa.
Yes, exactly. I'm not saying they did, but I would not be surprised if she didn't go up to his hotel room.
This movie began as, I want to make a World War II type movie. Mm-hmm. All of your films, to lesser or greater degrees, are about movies.
Yeah, no. Well... I am a genre filmmaker. I like working inside of a genre. I like working personally from my heart inside of a genre because that way I can reveal myself, but I can reveal myself without revealing myself. I can hide in plain sight. I do a genre story. I'm going to tell my story. I'm going to tell what's ever important going on with me at the time. But now I don't want you to know what's going on with me at the time. But if I put it inside of a genre, my close friends might know. But then I get to actually relate personally. But I'm still telling an exciting tale one way or the other.
Well, painting got to a point 100 years ago, a little more than 100 years ago, where good, serious, ambitious paintings were all about art. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, instead of just being about making pictures. Maybe that's where you are in the history of cinema.
Well, yeah. But at the same time, though, I mean, on one hand... Jackie Brown isn't about cinema. It's about these characters. But yet, I'm not afraid of genre. And so I make it this almost love letter right. to blaxploitation movies.
Right.
But it's not a blaxploitation movie. There's nothing exploitive about Jackie Brown at all.
No, it's a blaxploitation movie in quotes.
Very much so. But I think there's going to be a part of my cinema that will always have that quotes around it.
Yeah.
But because I'm not afraid of cinema.
Right.
I love cinema. I'm not trying to make cinema disappear. You know, could you imagine an author having read too many books?
No, or alluding to Shakespeare to Dickens or whatever.
Yeah, no, I love cinema. I have no problem basking in cinema and its history with my stories.
The other thing that strikes me about this film, I have never loved any given movie based on a comic book. Some of them are great. Some of them are less good.
Yeah.
This seemed to me, I came out of it thinking, what am I thinking? And it was like the perfectly realized comic book movie in a certain mm-hmm. way. Do you know?
Oh, I do kind of know what you mean, actually, because you know, growing up in the 70s as a little boy, I did read comics, and one of the comics that I really liked the most was Marvel Comics World War II story, Sergeant Fury and His Howling Commandos. And there is this one cover. And again, this doesn't quite happen in the damn book. They put it on the cover, but it never materializes in the book. But it's obviously some raid is going on in Nazi Germany, and you actually see Sergeant Fury. He's got Hitler in a like a headlock. He has his arm around him, but yet Hitler's other finger is heading towards a red button, and you see missiles in the background, and it's all very exciting. But actually, just to see Hitler in a wrestling headlock with Sergeant Fury, wow, what a story!
Yeah, yeah.
But movies will never give themselves permission to go there,
yes.
where Stan Lee's comic book allowed himself to go there, and so did I.
Exactly right. I'm Kurt Anderson, and I'm talking with Quentin Tarantino about his Oscar-nominated movie, Inglourious Basterds. We'll continue our conversation in a minute. And later, a sonata written for Radiator. That's coming up in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International, and WNYC. Stay with us. This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson, and I'm here with the singular filmmaker, Quentin Tarantino. His movie Inglourious Basterds is nominated for 8 Oscars, count them, including Best Director and Best Picture. Inglourious Basterds starts with this title, Once Upon a Time in Nazi-Occupied France, which, of course, especially given the first minutes of the movie, makes one think of Sergio Leone and yeah. Once Upon a Time in the West. Let's listen to a clip of the opening scene of that movie when Charles Bronson arrives on a train at a train station and finds the 3 gunmen waiting.
Ah, sure.
Did you bring a horse for me? Well, looks like we're shy of one horse. You brought 2 too many.
And Charles Bronson lives. As I saw Inglourious Basterds and I saw the beginning of the movie, I'm with my family, my 2 daughters and my wife, none of whom have seen a Sergio Leone movie. And I go, look, it's Sergio Leone. And they had no idea what I was saying, talking about. How did seeing those movies as a young man affect you?
Oh, very, very profoundly. I mean, you know, it's funny. I don't think I knew Sergio Leone by name at that time, but they would say
Spaghetti Western.
Well, when they would say Duck, You Sucker came out from the man that brought you Good and the Bad and the Ugly and for a few dollars more. Like, oh, I want to see that.
Yeah.
Because my mom actually had a huge crush on Clint Eastwood at that time. So we went and saw all of his films. I mean, Where Eagles Dare and the Dollars movies, you know, they became touchstones for me. And it was only years later that I realized how much I respond to the style of them, but actually they're some of the first movies I actually remember seeing in the theaters. And as far as I'm concerned, they really created modern filmmaking. They took filmmaking out of the 50s and out of the early 60s and really introduced, and then followed by Sam Peckinpah and The Wild Bunch. They introduced us to modern filmmaking. They are the first, the way we use music now, the way we cut to music. Movies were never cut to music before.
Right.
They were not cut rhythmically.
Yeah. The way we do violence.
Yeah, and the way we do violence. I mean, I've suffered for a long time. I might have gotten over it finally, but I've suffered forever for Sergio Leone-itis, where I can't introduce a character unless I spend 15 minutes doing it and making it a huge operatic aria as they're introduced or some set piece.
Right. You are nominated for a bunch of Oscars, including Best Picture. How much are you gaming it or thinking about the odds of this? And here I am in this point in my career and I'm up against this and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm not worrying about campaigning, but I got a kick out of both Avatar and incredible adrenaline rush from the Hurt Locker. But, one thing that's also really terrific is, both James Cameron and Catherine Bigelow were true inspirations to me when, I was a young man, working in a video store and wanting to be a director. I remember, because I actually think the 80s are the most barren period of time for Hollywood filmmaking. And literally, along with Cronenberg, along with David Lynch, Verhoeven.
Weirdos keeping it alive.
Yes, exactly. Jonathan Demme. Along with those people, the lights at the end of the tunnel, the breath of fresh air was Cameron coming out with Terminator and Catherine Bigelow coming out with Near Dark. If you remember the vampire movie she did, Near Dark, that massacre in the barroom scene, there was nothing like that decade. Nothing like that at all. It was revolutionary.
Well, so you can say, like all nominees are supposed to, it's just an honor to be nominated among these people.
Well, not only is it an honor to be nominated, and it's been a wonderful excuse to hang out. But what's really nice is in today's world, you work forever on a movie. In this case, I came up with the idea 10 years ago. You work forever on a film, and you're lucky if it plays in the theater in a competitive way for 4 weeks, and then boom. It's out of town, and then it's a pay-per-view, and then it's a DVD on a stack of other DVDs on somebody's coffee table. But all this stuff makes my movie still alive. My movie still has a heartbeat. It's still breathing. It's not behind me. It's beside me right now. And that's what's so great about all this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This has been great back and forth. Great talk.
You can hear more of my conversation with Quentin Tarantino at studio360.org. Inglourious Basterds is nominated for 8 Academy Awards, and as he said, it is out on DVD now.